Our gospel reading comes from Luke 12. These are the words of Jesus. I have come to bring fire on the earth, and how I wish it were already kindled. But I have a baptism to undergo, and what constraint I'm under until it is completed. Do you think that I came to bring peace on earth? No, I tell you, but division. From now on, there will be five in one family divided against each other, three against two, and two against three. They will be divided, father against son, and son against father, mother against daughter, and daughter against mother, mother-in-law against daughter-in-law, and daughter-in-law against mother-in-law. He said to the crowd, "When you see a cloud rising in the west, immediately you say, 'It's going to rain,' and it does. And when the south wind blows, you say, 'It's going to be hot,' and it is. Hypocrites, you know how to interpret the appearance of the earth and the sky. How is it that you don't know how to interpret this present time?" This is the word of the Lord. Sometimes when we say thanks be to God, we're like, "I think thanks be to God." Well, it's late August, and here we are. You had other options today, of course, but you made it to church for worship. You could have brunched, or golfed, or fished, or slept, or read a good book, or caught up on your Netflix series. But no, you chose to be here. We might even take a moment and imagine some of our friends or extended family members who are off somewhere else taking these last weeks of summer to travel and relax. But no, we're here. And the gospel reading from Luke sets before us a Jesus who seems to have gotten up on the wrong side of the bed. This is not the Jesus who heals with the gentle touch of his hands. This is not the Jesus who gathers the little children to bless them. This is not even the Jesus from just last week's gospel reading who addressed us all as his little flock, saying, "Don't be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom." In some kind of weird Jekyll and Hyde routine, the Jesus in this week's reading sounds barbed, sharp, rude, embattled, even harsh. "I've come to bring fire on the earth." Why is he talking like this? "Do you think I came to bring peace on earth? No, I tell you, but division." I liked it better when I was part of his little flock, didn't you? Luke's gospel begins and ends with a comforting word of peace. So what are we to make of this passage here in the middle of Luke's gospel, where Jesus claims to bring not peace, but fire and division? Well, when you think about peace, what do you imagine? Sometimes we imagine peace as the comfortable, easygoing, laid-back way we hope to get along with other people. But basically, that's Midwestern conflict avoidance and not really peace. The peace that Jesus announces creates as much conflict as it resolves. When you announce that there's a new kingdom arriving, a new order, a new arrangement, a new way of designing life, and a new way of organizing the distribution of wealth, of goods, of services, of value, of status, and of honor, that new vision will be threatening and destabilizing to many of us. Jesus' call for peace is a call for change in both the personal and the public arenas of life. He enacts this role as our peacemaker not by keeping everything the same, but instead by calling into question the way things are currently arranged, both in the world at large and in our own little corner of the world. This is why, when we read the Gospels, we find that those who were responsible for the continuation of the Jewish religious institutions, those who had political power, and those with great wealth feared him and felt threatened by him. They liked the rules of the game as they currently stood, And here comes Jesus announcing that the rules of the game are unjust, unmerciful, and uncompassionate. And Jesus calls us to another set of values, another set of habits, a new set of relationships, and this call will be divisive. Many of us are invested, heavily invested in keeping things the same. We like the way things currently work, either because it benefits us directly or because we just find comfort in the familiarity it provides for us. So the peace that Jesus offers to the world will be a fiery peace, a divisive peace. It's not as if his goal was to set family members against one another in that long list of who's fighting with who. Instead, Jesus is warning us that this invitation to a new kind of allegiance to God's kingdom will require a reassessment of anything else that we had managed to put in first place in our lives. Consider for just a moment that story that Jesus tells about the prodigal son. That story is, in many ways, a heartwarming tale about a reconciliation that happens within a family. The younger son leaves. He's an idiot. He squanders his money. He wastes his life. But finally, he comes to his senses and he returns home to a patient, compassionate, merciful father who runs to embrace him when he returns home. But this act of compassionate forgiveness and of generous welcome angers the older brother who refused to go in and join the feast. So right there in that little story, you have a picture of how even the most beautiful embrace between former enemies can cause division. There will always be some who are angry that the field has shifted, that the world has turned in a new direction, that the former walls between enemies that we'd all gotten used to have now been dismantled. I see this new life that Jesus offers to us as kind of like a build-from-scratch kit. Now, it's free if you want it, and that sounds like good news, but in fact, it's quite laborious to really receive it. Because to receive it, you will have to be willing to start all over. And for people like you and me, with all kinds of already existing commitments, this will be hard work. One way to imagine ourselves into this new life that Jesus invites us into is to consider living in a renovation project. Now, I've been thinking about renovation lately because this has been a summer of remodeling and renovating and fixing. At our house, we're in the middle of several yard projects, which there's still plenty to be done. Stephanie refinished our kitchen cabinets this summer. Now we're stripping and refinishing a kitchen table. Here at the church, we're in the middle of renovating the manse next door. We're discussing how we can fix some water problems coming from our bell tower. We've been rewiring the place since we have fiber now, and we're in the middle of this new media installation project, so lots going on here. Your friends over at the Presbyterian Church in Nevada, just across the line, they are embarking on some unexpected renovations. Their pastor, Greg Faree, who many of you know, has been with them for 39 years, and he retired this summer. So I'm helping them during this time of transition by moderating their session. So this past week, I traveled to Nevada, thought we'd handle some, you know, basic things about this process and the, you know, how we work through the steps to call an interim pastor and all that. But when I got there, I found out that a stool had backed up in their fellowship area and had overflowed, and they had about this much water in a big part of their church. So they had to tear out the floors and the drywall, and when they did that, they found out there was asbestos, and so they went through a whole asbestos abatement project, and now they have to completely rebuild their church kitchen. So not the conversation I thought we were going to be having. Now, some of you watch HGTV, I know, and it's dangerous if you do that. If you watch too much, it will fill you with renovation ideas you have neither the skills to accomplish nor the money to complete. Take just as one example this show, Love It or List It. So here's how it works. Someone is dissatisfied with their current house. They don't like it. There's something wrong with it. It's too small. There aren't enough bedrooms or bathrooms. The kitchen's too closed in. The layout of the house doesn't work. The closets are in the wrong place. The yard's too small. Something's wrong. You get the picture. This house isn't working. They need something different. But the brilliant twist to this show, Love It or List It, is that the family's not going to have just one option of a renovated house. They're going to have two options. First, they'll be shown several new homes that has everything they need and meets their budget. So that's one choice. Their other choice is to stay in their current home, which will undergo a massive renovation to incorporate all the changes they needed to bring it up to their current needs. Now, of course, to ratchet up the drama, one of the two hosts specializes in renovating the current house, and the other host specializes in showing them homes that meet their needs without making any changes. One spouse takes the role of wanting to move on in a different house, and one spouse takes the role of, no, we should stay here. Now our home, we have it finally just as we want it. Somehow, by the end of the episode, they have you actually caring about what this couple, whom you don't know, of course, what they decide to do. But that show, like many of the renovation and remodeling shows on HGTV, assumes that there is plenty of money to do whatever needs to be done, and that all the changes being considered will be an upgrade and an improvement. Now come back to consider Jesus' invitation to this new way of life. And we cannot miss the tension that exists. If we want to get the life we've always wanted, we'll have to tear out some of the familiar features that we love and cherish, things we've worked hard to build in life, things we assume we could keep forever. Now take this home renovation metaphor one step further. If we're talking about, let's take for example, a house that's in complete shambles. It's ugly, it's unappealing in every respect. Then of course in that situation, imagining a gut remodel, starting from scratch, is no big deal. But if we're talking about renovating a home that you love, that perhaps you designed yourself, a home that has many features that you can't dream of parting with, then in that situation, imagining a full gut renovation will be a little more difficult, right? The message that Jesus brings today might seem harsh and difficult. In some ways it is, but I hope that you also hear it as encouraging and inspiring. Those of you whose faith journey and whose growth and development in life has required you on some level to part ways with your parents or your family traditions, to go your own route, you can feel today the support of Jesus as he tries to honestly describe how hard that path might be. Those of you who've done the difficult work of moving off in new directions, directions that are different from what your family expected, directions that are different from your family habits, those of you can hear a confirming and encouraging word. You have done good work. You have done hard work in crafting this new life with God's help, and Jesus is with you as you go. And as you look around this room, I hope that you see you have other people on the journey with you, new brothers and sisters in Christ who might not be biologically related to you, but who are your friends sharing in this journey with you. I have trouble knowing exactly how to welcome this harsh, divisive, seemingly judgmental Jesus into my life. Maybe you can identify with me. I've lived long enough to figure out how to survive. I know the basic rules of the game, and I can play them well enough by now. I'm far enough in that I don't really like the idea of starting over. How about you? I've come to some conclusions about people, about life, about work, about politics. What I wish I could have, what I'd love to have, is a smaller Jesus. The kind of Jesus that I could simply add on to these other things that I've already come to believe and value. That way, Jesus could be for me kind of a nice little attachment to the machine of life that I've already got up and running. The problem with this scenario is that Jesus refuses to be my little add-on decoration. He won't join my team. He won't smoothly integrate into my system. He is here before me and before you, asking all of us to make a decision. Do we want to keep the world we know, or will we let him dismantle it with us, trusting that what gets built in the ruins of that old world will be better in the long run? Do we want to place a safe bet by keeping everything the same? Or do we want to take the risk of a life that traffics in the utterly new and unexpected? Friends, there's good news in this sharp warning. Jesus won't be one more decoration you add to an already built life. He wants us to clear things away so that we can build something new. And while this, of course, feels threatening to our need for comfort and familiarity, it's just the cost of this exciting life of discipleship to Jesus Christ. We hand over to him the world we know in order to receive back a whole new world. Amen.